Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It appears now that violence in France has finally died down after something like 3 weeks of unrest involving young men in cities across the country. The riots began when two boys of North African origin died accidentally after running from the police. Almost 9,000 cars have been burned and 3,000 people have been arrested. In this part of the program, we'll try to talk a little bit about what this wave of angry protest says about France and its ability to fully integrate newcomers and how those challenges indeed extend past France to other countries in Europe. And our guest for this part of the program is Nicolas Dubois-Grolier. He's a visiting fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. He is an expert on France and French foreign and defense policies, as well as transatlantic relations. He's joining us this morning from Brookings. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. All we ask of people who call in is that they're just brief so that we can get in as many different people as possible. But anyone who is listening is certainly welcome to join in the conversation. In Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455 is the number to call. We do also have a toll-free line. That would mean that if you're listening over the air around Illinois, Indiana, or in fact, if you're listening on the internet in the United States, you may use the toll-free line and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. Again, 333-9455 or WILL. That's for Champaign-Urbana listeners, and for the others, 800-222-9455. Well, Mr. Dubois-Grolier, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
I came across a story. This was on the BBC on their website, and it was a story from last week, and it was indeed quoting French police as saying that they believe that the levels of violence had returned to normal. The thing that struck me about this story was that they said that Wednesday night, so that would be Wednesday of last week, 98 vehicles were burned, marking, in the words of the story, quote, a return to normal. It's sort of hard to believe that 98 cars being set on fire was normal, but apparently that is, particularly compared to the level that you had been seen before. Are in fact things in France, do you think, getting back to normal?
Well, to come back to your first point about the number of cars, it's the sad truth that this normality is indeed about 100 cars destroyed every night at the country level, which is, you know, when you think France is not a huge country, but 100 cars for the whole country is not that huge a number, but still it happens very frequently, and it is definitely a sign of how, you know, the tensions, the lingering tensions that take place, that exist in those areas. To come back to the second question, in terms of are we getting back to this normal, kind of strange normality that you've described, yes, I think so. I must say that most people, most observers were surprised by the intensity of violence that took place during those 3 weeks. And I think people were also quite surprised that it came to a sudden stop after 3 weeks. Of course, the curfew, a law allowing local authorities to establish a very localized curfews was reenacted or revived, if you will. This is definitely one of the reasons, but still, it's quite strange that the violence receded in such a quick way.
Mm. Well, as you point out, there was the state of emergency that was declared on November 9th that allowed the local authorities to impose curfews. It allowed them to ban public gatherings. Do you think that there was something more, if you ask this question, why it is that after this very high level of violence, the worst violence probably in the country in something like 40 years, why that it relatively quickly just seemed to stop? I mean, is there something else other than this state of emergency that could account for that?
Beyond the state of emergency, I think leaders of the various of the those communities have played an important role, and especially Muslim leaders, and that's something we may want to come back to later on. I think there was also, I mean, the police ended up being very, very present in those areas. There were about 10,000 police officers drafted in those areas. That's about 250 different places in France. And keeping in mind that the police we're talking about here is a professional riot police, just not just the you know, the usual cop on the beat, which you kind of take suddenly in those areas. There are people who do these type of things most of the time. So they are highly trained, and so 10,000 of them is quite a huge number. Mm.
As you say, I think in the accounts of what happened, it was always mentioned the fact that the people who were involved in doing this rioting, these young men, were Muslim. And mm-hmm. that what we're talking about here is young men who were generally were born in France, to perhaps though to parents who were not, to parents who were immigrants, and who indeed came from perhaps from the Arab world, perhaps also from North Africa. There is among these young men a great level of discontent because they feel that they face discrimination, because they feel that they don't have equal opportunity in employment. In fact, because they feel that because they were born in France, that they're French, and yet don't feel that they are fully accepted. So there are a number of things that are going on here. There's economic issues, there's racial issues, but it seems that a good deal of attention gets directed to the fact that they are Muslim. And some people, their analysis of this goes to the classic sort of clash of cultures that mm-hmm. we have heard about so much over the last few years. And some people say, however, at the same time, some people say, well, that's really not, that is not as important as the other issues, the economic ones, discrimination perhaps based on race, and that we should not overemphasize the fact that they're Muslim and attribute this at all to conflict about religion or religious values. And as you size up all of these various things, these things are not new. They didn't just start 3 weeks ago. How would you apportion the significance of all of those things in the mix of laying the groundwork, making it possible for this wave of violence to happen?
Well, I think the first issue we need to address is the issue of those youngsters being Muslim. I think when we say they're Muslim, I think it's important to keep in mind that indeed it is for most of them their religion, and for most of them the religion they inherited through their family. But the fact that they're Muslim doesn't mean that when they were in the streets, they were throwing rocks at the police or setting cars on fire because they're Muslim. I think what's very important, I think the other, and I definitely belong to the second school of thought, which you mentioned there, is it is not an issue. It is not because they happen to be Muslim that we are facing some kind of mini clash of civilization here. I think the other issues which you've mentioned, such as the lack of economic opportunities, such as the fact that they are victims of discriminations, I would add a quite important dimension, which is related to the place, the type of urban environment where they live. I mean, basically, these people live in kind of Soviet-style, ugly estate housing, which were built in the 60s and 70s, which in those days were considered to be, you know, extremely modern and bringing lots of all the new amenities that modern life could bring. But now, and lots of, let's say, more traditional French people or people who were not didn't have immigrants' parents, chose to live there at the beginning, and then gradually those areas became not exclusively immigrants and sons and daughters of immigrants, but more or less so. And it so happens that living in those areas is not a very pleasant thing to do. So discrimination, the discrimination I was referring to, I wouldn't ascribe it to the fact that they're Muslim. I think it's very important for people to realize that, you know, we tend nowadays in the post 9/11 environment to kind of look at the world in a certain way, to look maybe at Muslims differently and Arab people differently. France, for better or worse, has a quite a long history with lots of Arab countries and Muslim countries. So, you know, we knew about Islam and we knew about Arab people before terrorism, let's say. So I think this is really, really not the main the main issue. But yes, there is discrimination, more based on, you know, kind of a xenophobia, you know, rejecting someone who is slightly different from you based on the color of their skin, and a lack of economic opportunities. I was saying in those areas you have unemployment rates of about 30-35% among those youth. Mm.
We have a caller to talk with. Perhaps I should very quickly before bringing them in and mention again our guest, Nicolas Desbois-Grolier. He's visiting fellow at the Center on the United States in Europe at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. We're talking about France and French politics, and particularly the violence that has gone on there over the past few weeks. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana listeners. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. We have someone to talk with here in Champaign, where we are, on line number one. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I have a number of questions. I'll try to go through them quickly. It seems like the French, at least a large number of them, have a blind spot. On the one hand, they have their idealism of, you know, liberty, equality, fraternity, and... But there seems to be obviously this racism among a large number of people. It's almost as if they're blind to the racism of the system, and so there's a large divide between the idealism of the French Republic and the realism of what's going on. So I was wondering if you could address this question of what causes this blind spot. So many people don't seem to be able to see that there could be economic or xenophobic or racist reasons for this resentment. And then this law of 1955, I expected that the riots would get worse because of the irony of it having been applied during the Algerian War, but that it wouldn't have the effect of stopping the riots. But it also allows for searches, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And Sarkozy is talking about drug gangs as being the cause of all this, although he doesn't say what the cause of the drug use is in the ghettos. But I'm wondering, it seems to me that as the Minister of Interior, he's also going to be looking for a lot of, if anything having to do with terrorism. I don't know whether that's actually where I don't know whether those groups of people who may have more problems with school are more likely to be involved in Islamic politics of an extreme nature or not. I'm just wondering whether he's covering over the fact that he's looking for drug users or drug gangs to use as an excuse to do a lot of searches for other things. I'm wondering about the role of the gendarmes or the national police. How is it different than what exactly are the gendarmes? And finally, maybe you could talk about the split between Sarkozy and Villepin, or, you know, we hear, I just like to know what percentage of the French public actually seems to do a social analysis. I mean, it seems like the socialists come up with a more of a social analysis of what's going on, whereas other people are looking for, like, one reason why this happened, like it's because of polygamy or it's because of drug gangs or whatever. So I'll let you work on that.
All right. Well, the caller has given us enough to fill the rest of the time. And I think that one way or another we can get to all of this. And certainly I want to talk a little bit about the major figures in French politics and how they have reacted to this. But let's go right to the very first point, because I think that it is something that a lot of people in France, I think, are also wrestling with. That is, how do you square the ideal, the French ideal, about liberty and brotherhood with the fact that, indeed, there is racism in the country, and there may indeed be institutional racism, which makes it very difficult for people of color, particularly, whose roots are not in long in France to be successful and have the same kind of opportunities that others do?
I'm not sure. So, of course, there is in the French Republic a fair amount of idealism, which transpires through its motto, which is liberty, equality, and fraternity. Especially equality and fraternity are not very easy to reach for most people, even be it for French people or for other people. I'm not sure I would. So there is definitely, I agree with the call, there is a gap between the Republic's idealism and the reality of everyday life. I wouldn't. You mentioned, David, institutional racism. I don't see it personally. Of course, I have not been a victim of such a thing, so I'm not necessarily the best placed person to talk about it. But I haven't read or I haven't heard or analyzed anything such as institutional racism. I think it's more a question of, you know, it's true that there's a widespread feeling in the French society that at one point too many immigrants of Northern Africa and Western Africa came to France and settled there, and that now, because the economic machine is not producing as many jobs as needed, because there are some housing shortages, I think that's an important thing to mention. You know, then you have people who come up and say, well, which is something which happens in most countries where you have immigrants. At some point, people say, well, surely people who have been there forever should have some kind of priority compared to some people who may be illegal. In the case of the rioters, who were, as you mentioned, young people, they're French, and their parents were not, but they were born in France, so they're French, and it's more difficult for some of them because of a creeping discrimination which they're facing. Again, I don't think institutional, and the fact that maybe they come from areas where it's more difficult to get a good education. So, you know, they combine handicaps, and then it's very difficult for them to make up for those handicaps later.
Let me just raise one other point that the caller makes, and then I think I have another caller I'll get to. I don't want to make them wait forever. And then we can come back to some of the questions the caller raised about French politics. But that was about she indeed brought up the fact that the state of emergency that had been put in place, the one that allows for searches, for bans on public gatherings, for curfews, does indeed date from the period of the Algerian Civil War in the 1950s. Does that resonate particularly with anybody, that connection between now and then?
To be honest, I think it did resonate with some commentators, and especially the commentators who were already observing the scene at that time, some journalists or some politicians. But really, I don't think it did resonate with the youngsters we're talking about. And one of the reasons is that, well, they are French, and what they're trying to achieve is to reach their full place in French society. So I think the colonial past is something which is very distant and which is not really relevant to them. The discrimination some of them are the victims of has nothing to do with the colonies. It had just had something to do with, you know, kind of a classic unfortunate racism which you find in many societies, unfortunately. So I don't think so. And also, it so happens that they used, revived the 1955 law, but they could have used other laws or judicial measures which you can find in the constitution, which dates back to 1958. So I think that they they just thought that this was the most most appropriate law. And just one point on it, it has to be conveyed that the curfew hasn't been actually used in that many places. So the kind of a blanket law was revived, and then local authorities has had the right opportunity to use it or not to use it, but it hasn't been used that much in reality.
Hmm. Let's talk with someone else here, also in Urbana, on our line 4. Hello.
Yes, hello. I have a question about how movies like Mi Vie en Rose and an older film called Netty is sort of showing American audiences the vociferousness of French values and middle-class ideals. And I was hoping that the caller could sort of talk to how over the last, I would say, 8 to 10 years, people between the ages of 25 to 45 years who have become members of the growing professional class in terms of technology that's been a part of France's economy, have started to sort of go more towards a right-wing political view when it comes to issues of not only North African, but also sub-Saharan African French immigrants and residents, and how those ideals get couched in some of the broadcasts that we've heard about integration and assimilation and the French way. And as a second part of that question, I was hoping that he could respond to how attacks on cultural forms such as Rai and the integration of Rai with hip-hop in speaking the political consciousness of these not-so-young 20- to 30-year-old men and women who were rioting in the country. I'll listen off air.
All right. Well, can you take on that question?
I'm not sure I totally understood the way I understood the first question is, would the current middle class and middle age people, would they be more anti-immigrants or anti-people with North African origins than before? At least that's the way I understood it. I think we have to expand a little bit to the overall context. And the overall context is, in France, is one of, as I said before, many people thinking that we have reached a stage where we have too large an immigrant population. We still have illegal immigration coming in. So people have the impression that, some people have the impression that, well, it's going to be difficult to assimilate the population of foreign origin which is present on the soil now, because we still have some new people coming, and we all already think that maybe there are too many of them. And of course, most of your listeners will be aware that you have in France some far right and extreme right movements, which of course thrive on those fears and thrives on those problems. I mean, immigration is something that Jean-Marie Le Pen, who heads the Front National, has been talking about for 25 years. Other politicians, even the other politicians who don't share his views, have to take into account some of the issues, the way they are framed by the far right and by the extreme right, and also because it does resonate within quite a large section of the population. The second part of the question, mentioning Rai, which is for people who don't know, the Algerian type of music, which is which comes from Algeria, and which is being, let's say, adapted, kind of a combination of maybe now French and Algerian music. I think it is actually interesting to note that Arab music is actually quite popular in many quarters among young people, and people who can go to nightclubs or these kind of things. You will hear a lot of music which are sometimes Arab songs, and more often which are songs or rhythm based on some Arab rhythms or Arab lyrics. So I think that's maybe one way in which the Arab community is also spreading within the mainstream in the country.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580, Nicolas Desbois-Grelier, he's visiting fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. His expertise is in France and French foreign and defense policies and in transatlantic relations. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I want to get back to some of the other questions that the first caller raised and to talk a little bit about the government response to all of this, starting with the response, or I think some people probably would say a lack of response, by the president, Jacques Chirac, who waited, I think, more than 2 weeks. The violence erupted in late October, and I think it wasn't until the middle of November that he actually, in a formal way, made an address to the nation about this violence and talked about what was going on and the concerns about identity and so forth. Why was it that Mr. Chirac waited so long, apparently, before really stepping up and at least addressing this in a kind of a formal way?
Well, that's a difficult question. I have two elements which could partly answer it. One of them is that, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, there are these kind of violence happen on a regular basis in various parts of the country. So maybe there was the idea that, well, it's something which is not going to last very long. It's the kind of thing which happens here and there, and so let's not dramatize the issue. That could be one answer. The second answer is more linked to the way the French political system is organized. We have to keep in mind that you have not only a president in France, but also a prime minister. And on domestic issues, the prime minister is traditionally on the forefront, and the president is more active on the foreign scene, so it is not really. It was not personally shocking for me to. I didn't really feel that Jacques was. There was that much of a delay. There was some delay, but it would have been very surprising for me if he had spoken formally after just a week. Surely he could have done it a bit before than he did, but then there may be other elements which I'm not aware of. Mm.
His presidency will end in 2007. Mm-hmm. And it is, I guess everyone expects or had expected that it was the person who would likely take his place would be the man who is now the prime minister, Dominique de Villepin. And that there has been something of a, well, it seems that there may be something of a struggle going on, though, between Mr. de Villepin and Nicolas Sarkozy, who's the minister of the interior, who actually some people say, through some very inflammatory comments that he made, helped to touch off the rioting. He also seems to be positioning himself to make a kind of a challenge, and perhaps he has an eye on the presidency as well. Can you talk a little bit about these two men and how they have responded, and perhaps does this tell you something about what's going on in French politics?
Oh, it does, definitely. At the moment, on the right, on the government side, the French politics is more or less reduced to a duel between Dominique de Villepin, the prime minister, and Nicolas Sarkozy, the interior minister, in the sense of home affairs, homeland security minister. It's a permanent duel. You nearly every day you have some what we say in French a little phrase, a little comment made by one about the other, or one tries to be on the scene before the other gets there, etc. So it's there's a kind of a ridiculous dimension to this duel. There definitely Nicolas Sarkozy who is also the head of the main governing party, the UMP, is definitely in the running for the presidential election in 2007. Dominique de Villepin, the prime minister, is most probably going to be a candidate as well, but it's not 100% sure at the moment. So obviously, the scenario as it is developing at the moment is really a fight between the two men. Nicolas Sarkozy represents more change in the sense that he's been the one who has explicitly said that he was quite keen to replace Jacques Chirac. So he has kind of positioned himself as an opponent within the right itself, of course, to the president, whereas Dominique de Villepin is a loyal lieutenant to President Chirac. So that's one of the differences. Nicolas Sarkozy has the interesting, if we go back a little bit to the theme we were exploring in the first part of the show, Nicolas Sarkozy has this interesting characteristic of being both very hard when it comes to law and order, something on which he has based part of his political reputation. But he's also one of the very rare politicians, be it on the left or on the right, who is advocating affirmative action type of measures to help the community we were talking about before. And among other things, and he's the one who has organized and made sure that the Muslim community in France was more recognized and more organized so that the state has community leaders it can turn to when it's necessary, or on a kind of a ongoing political dialogue. So Nicolas Sarkozy is you know, it's playing a little bit on the two sides of the on two different sides, whereas Dominique de Villepin has a more traditional, more centrist approach.
Let us talk with some other people who are listening. We have a couple ready to go here. One, line one is in Urbana, here where we are. Hello.
Yeah, about the governmental response. I watch Channel 2 on cable all the time, or any chance I get. And I was amazed at the restraint exhibited by the riot police. Some of them had been hurt quite badly, and yet they did not go wild in their response. And my biggest comparison would be that I keep thinking of the way the Palestinian children were handled in Israel. In the Intifada, and it's like night and day, much more restraint and professionalism on the French side of the equation. I noticed on Channel 2 also that, and this would be in sharp contrast to the way such a thing would have been handled in the United States. There was a serious and effort made to try to figure out why it was the kids, these Muslim kids, were rioting. I mean, they had some very serious discussions about it, and there wasn't just the notion that that you just put a clamp down on it quickly and forget about why. They actually did try to figure out what was going on, and very, very soon into the riots. I thought that was admirable. Another comment is that yesterday there was a conference put on by Muslims, I believe, that included the French ambassador to the United Nations, and he pointed out that recently our State Department Office of Research had which once a year puts out this report, which he didn't name, unfortunately, but he quoted from it saying that large majorities of Muslims in France voice confidence in the country's governments, feel at least partly French, and support integrating into French society, and that in a 2005 survey that went along with this report, 95% of French Muslims had a favorable overall opinion of France. 89% of them expressed confidence in the public schools, 65% in the national government, and this was all an American survey. So, you know, there's a it's kind of it would be wrong, and I'm not saying you have at all, but or anybody else has, but it'd be wrong to picture this whole thing as being such a indictment of the way France has handled its immigrants, an out-and-out indictment anyway. But my question, I have a question, actually, and that is, I was just, it seems to me that part of this, part of the problem with kids like this is that there's a kind of a level of behavior and attitude which is hard to convey to people, no matter how long they've been in the country, and either they accept it or they don't, and then when they don't, they tend to be ostracized a bit, and it's kind of on the level of sensibilities and intuition, and France seems to elevate those things, or at least from. You know, someone who hasn't even ever been there, it seems to elevate that in its culture. And I was curious if you had any ideas about whether that might be a contributing factor. And I'll hang up. Thank you.
Well, there's some very interesting points here, which I can address very quickly. On the point on the riot police is linked to the point I was making earlier. In France, you have lots of street demonstrations. Most of them are not violent. But sometimes at the end of peaceful demonstrations, which again happen all the time, you often have, you know, a group of people who, you know, who seize the opportunity to start breaking shops and this kind of thing. So the riot police is really very well organized. It's a different corp from the regular police. They have a different name, etc. So it's not necessarily that they show huge restraint, but they're professional at handling those circumstances, and hopefully that's the reason why they're not there are very very few casualties. And I would remind your auditors that in 1968, a kind of a student revolution in France, nobody was killed, which was quite impressive given the extent of the troubles at the time. Of course, here we are focusing on the train which don't arrive on time. We are focusing on the troubles. We're focusing on the problems which they are, and which we try to shed the most objective light as we can. There are, of course, a lot of people, be there immigrants of the first generation or the second generation or now the third generation, who are well integrated, who work, who are happy to be there. I know some of them, and some of them feel extremely uncomfortable with this kind of violence. So yes, the picture is not as bleak as it might appear, when of course we are concentrating on the troubles at a given point in time. And one of your previous caller was saying, well, who exactly were the youngsters participating in those troubles? Of course, I would say the majority were disenfranchised youth. But some of them also were more organized, not criminal gangs in the way we would think of them in the United States, but more maybe small drug trafficking groups. And some of them were there for the excitement of it all. The effort to understand, well, the president, when he made the formal intervention you were mentioning, David, before, the president basically said two things. First thing he said, well, first we have to re-establish law and order in those areas, and that's what we're going to do, and that's why we're going to use curfews. And the second thing is he said he invited the whole French population to question its overall attitude towards immigrants in general and second-generation immigrants. So I think both the prime minister and the president have acknowledged in one way or another that there were real difficulties which needed to be addressed.
Maybe quickly I want to ask a question, because we've talked about the fact that no doubt there are other countries in Europe, other industrialized nations, that are facing some of the same challenge in integrating newcomers fully into the society, into the economy. And there are people who feel that they have been discriminated against. They don't have equality of opportunities in education and employment, and have reason to be angry. So in one sense, there's nothing special about that in France. Other places face that. However, also some people have said that something about this outbreak of unrest and violence, there's something about it that was particularly French. Point to the tendency of people in France to take to the streets as a way of demonstrating their dissatisfaction with conditions as they are. And I don't know if that's true or not. Do you think, we can say that other countries do face some of the same challenges, that something about this was unique, was particularly French?
I would say what could be particularly French in those troubles were two things. One is the one you mentioned, for kind of complex historical reasons, and somehow unfortunate, I find, French people tend to express their dissatisfaction in the streets, you know, most often in peaceful ways, but even those peaceful ways kind of disrupt the way other people live at a given moment in time. So yes, for some reason, the French, they love demonstrating in the streets. The other thing I think which is more important is that it is true that there is in France, for historical reasons, a fear of the notion of multiculturalism. And maybe that's one of the differences with the United Kingdom, for example, or the Netherlands, at least until recently, because the way France kind of came up on the scene as a country centuries after centuries was as a very centralized country where, and that was the addition of the French Revolution, of course, where everybody was equal, and then everybody was equal, so people didn't need to express specific needs based on the group they belonged to, because that was exactly the case during the Ancien Régime before the revolution, where people, depending on which group they belonged to, they had differing rights. So the whole idea of the revolution was to say, well, everybody is equal, so you know, let's move on from there. And this idea is extremely entrenched in the French psychology, both on the right and on the left, possibly a little bit more on the left. And so when a group manifests itself as a group, it goes against the grain of French society, and it's difficult, and that's I think the moment we've reached, and that's I think will be the difficulties we have to tackle from now on.
Let's talk with some other callers. Maybe very quickly I should again introduce our guest, Nicolas de Bois-Grolier. He's a visiting fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. We're talking about France and French politics and what's been going on there recently over the past few weeks. We have several callers here ready to go, and we'll take them in the order they came in, starting with Champagne and Line 2. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Excellent conversation. I think we should have this here in the States because some of the same issues apply. You had said at one point that the majority of the rioters were disenfranchised youth, and I have to say I don't see that reflected in the media that we're exposed to, in the American media, in the British media. It seems that the 80-20 principle applies. 20% or less of the rioters actually have an agenda. They're trying to make some kind of political or social or religious or economic statement, but it seems like the large majority of people are simply joining in for fun. They're opportunists who have a chance to create some mayhem or maybe profit a little bit, maybe just get out a little bit of temporary anger, but it just seems like most of the people are just opportunists. They're not making a political statement. I think that we're misinterpreting this whole situation and creating a political or social movement where there is none. So I'll set that aside. The real question I had was, we're talking about third-generation French. I mean, that's what everybody seems to be saying, it's second, third-generation French. Why haven't they integrated? We have, in America, lots of experience with wave after wave of immigration, and it seems like the most successful people in America look at integration as a both-and situation. The people who have the most trouble look at integration as an either-or. Either I'm going to be American, or I'm going to be whatever. The people who are successful say, hey, yes, I'm an Irish-American, or I'm a German-American, or I'm a Vietnamese-American, or I'm a South African-American. You know, they look at integration as adding to their identity, not rejecting their past identity. What's going on in France with that? And when do we hold the immigrants responsible for choosing not to integrate? So I'll let you mull on that a little bit. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Well, thank you for the question. I mean, it's definitely, it's to an extent, it's the heart of the matter. When we compare the United States and France, it's both revealing in some ways, but in other ways, it makes the situation even more difficult to understand because the histories, obviously, of the two countries are extremely different. But I'm going to try to make a few points on how it is in France. France is both a country of immigration, but also a country of national homogeneity and an old country. So it's an old country. So it's one of the oldest nation in Europe and possibly the world because it's been basically in the shape it has and in the as it is nowadays for about 1,000 years now. So it's that's more or less where the idea of the nation state was born, where you have one state which corresponds very strictly to a nation. Whereas in Germany, for example, you have more the notion of the people, folk. So the notion is quite different. In Germany, for example, what's important is in terms of nationality, the blood. Whereas in France, it's more if you're born in France, you become French, because that's the key role. We've had some immigration, important immigration waves before, which after the inevitable early frictions, then were very successful. Italian immigration, Portuguese immigration, Spanish immigrations, Polish immigration are the main ones. And you have in France nowadays lots of people who have a Spanish names, a Spanish last name, or a Polish last name. And they're obviously totally integrated, and that's. But then the question we reach is, what is it? What does it mean to be French, and what does it mean to be American? And it seems that, as you were saying, maybe they're because the United States is essentially and purely a country of immigrants by definition. That's the way the country itself was built. Then the way you join the American community is probably easier than the way you have to join, the way you can join a community of a country which is itself very old. So it seems that in the, as the caller said, in the United States, sometimes I meet people who tell me, you know, they're Americans, but they tell me I'm French because maybe their grandmother was French. But in France, you will never meet someone would never say this. They would not say, you know, if their grandmother was from Hungary and Poland, they will not say I'm Polish at all. They will just refer maybe to very distant origins. So maybe it's just a little bit more complicated to become part of a country, maybe potentially more rewarding at the end, I don't know, but maybe more complicated to join a community which is older and which asks its newcomers, the people who've recently joined, to really blend more in the overall community rather than keep too strong a link to their previous communities. Mm.
Well, you know, we are going to have to stop, and I want to thank the callers and apologize to the couple that we couldn't take because we've come to the end of the time, but stop we must, and to thank our guest, Nicolas Dubois-Grolier. He's a visiting fellow at the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
And also thanks to the folks there at Brookings for being on the other end of the high-quality connection there with the guest.